Golf Smarter, number 577, published on January 31, 2017. Bad golfers are just as happy as scratch golfers. Then why are we all miserable? With Fred Shoemaker.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Fred.
Oh, hello, Fred. Thank you for having me back here.
Oh, are you kidding? I've been hoping to have you back for such a long time and been receiving emails from all over the world saying, when is Fred Shoemaker coming back to talk about extraordinary golf?
We'll make sure not to bum out those people who are sent those emails by this podcast.
Let me get right to it, Fred. You know, so often we hear about how the lessons that can be learned about life and about yourself can be found on the golf course. I've been reviewing again the book Extraordinary Putting, and you kind of drill that down some levels to make the observation that about putting, that you know, the things that you can really learn about yourself, about life, can be dropped down into the putting, not just the golf course itself, but on the putting green.
Yes.
Please.
Well, the operative word you said there is can. It doesn't necessarily mean that you will. I mean, this is an intentional act, intentional to look at who one is being through the act that you're doing, in this case, putting. On its own, it's probably not going to happen. People say that golf teaches life lessons. No, it doesn't. It only does if you intend it to be, and whether you're willing to look. Well, it can teach you about your relationship to failure, because most of the putts you hit don't go in. It can teach you about self-trust. It can teach you about creating an environment in which it's safe for you to learn, or safe to explore things. You can learn about concentration while putting. You can learn about many different things. I mean, if you ever said, I want to learn about learning, well, just put a putter in your hand, start putting, and just begin to notice your relationship to the exploring, trust, failure, you know, overcoming obstacles. It's all there. The beauty about putting is that it happens in such a small way. Anyone can do it. And the interesting part for me is that the way that you putt, the same way of being, you'll take into chipping, you'll take into your full swing. And if you want to express it a little wider, you're going to take it into how you are in business, and you'll take it into how you are in your family. It's still just you. And if you're willing to look at it, you can find out a lot about you.
And how do we peel that back and recognize that?
Well, first of all, to realize that one of the purposes of a game, the truth is, Fred, your handicap's about what now?
About 11.
About 11. So in reality, if you happen to shoot 77 one day, or an 88 the next, or whatever in the same day, it's not going to matter a big deal in the world, really. Yeah. Is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay. So having a low score is not going to really do anything really valuable for you. It's not going to help your bank account. It won't help your relationships, really. There are a few people in the world who play it for a living. It might have some value for them.
Boy, you know, I'm going to stop you there and say it definitely has an impact on my relationships with the people I'm playing with that day.
Yes, that's right.
Not playing well. It's like, okay, Fred, you can just walk in front of us for a while. We don't need you here right now.
Which is something to learn there, right?
Absolutely.
So if the point being that the purpose of a game may be to learn something that isn't in a game, isn't in the game, that's why games were invented. Games were invented to simulate life, such that you were much better in life when you got off the game. But we've raised games to a different level that the game itself is important. And we're hooked into it, as if it really mattered whether Vijay Singh is the first leading money winner or Tiger Woods is. Like, okay, that's maybe fine. But given that as the background and that golf really is important, we don't look for those other things. But if you can demiss it, so to speak, or demystify it, by saying, you know, what can I learn while playing the game that would make a difference for my life? Then you have some other opportunities. And, see, Fred, being good at golf isn't really going to do you any good. I mean, in real life. And I think people are hooked on the idea that it does. When you can see that, then you can make other choices, like saying, you know, I'd like to play today to see if I can learn about letting go and freedom and have my body be de-stressed and at ease, such that I have more energy when I'm done than when I began. Be an interesting way to play golf. Or suppose a golf swing could be like having a massage that every time you're done with a swing, your body feels much more comfortable than when you started. It'd be a nice way to play golf. Or you could learn about honoring your commitment. Let's say a commitment is to connect with the target and swing freely. And even if you mess up the first couple holes, to learn about honoring your commitment in a what might be called a critical situation, you know, in a time when you're not playing that well. So there's so much to be learned, but only if you see it as something outside of the game may it be at least important as the game itself. Because if I live in the town of Carmel, and if all of Carmel got a low handicap, it wouldn't be any better town. And we think it would be. So sometimes you just have to poke at the number one myth that getting better is going to make people so much happier. It really doesn't. I'm sorry to say.
You've just disappointed a lot of people, but I think that they're going to keep listening because there's got to be more to it than that.
Well, I don't know if we talked about this in the last time, but I was supposed to talk at the Coaching and Teaching Summit a few years ago. I was the last person to talk. This is a three-day connection of golf teachers. There are about 1,000 golf professionals. So I listened to this for 2.5 days. And when it became my turn to talk, it became obvious that the whole golf world revolves around one simple axis. And the axis is if people get better, they'll be happier. It's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. It's like in business, if people get more money, they'll be happier. Or that revolves around that, or more production. So when it became my turn to talk, I said, okay, I've been trained to challenge the basic assumption of any culture I'm in. Is it true or not? So I said to the folks, and there are 1,000 of them sitting in these stands, and I said, you have achieved what very few people you ever coach will achieve. You have gotten better. You have reached the epitome of what people are asking for. This is the largest group of low handicap players that will exist in the world this year. And I just have to ask you something. Are you really happy?
Right, I knew you were. It's perfect.
I know, that's rotten.
No. I was like, where can you be going with this? Obviously, are you happier because of it?
Not only that, are you satisfied? Do you get full of joy when you play? Can you hardly wait for the adventure? Do you love the being out with people and communing with nature, so to speak? And they just laugh just like a 20 handicappers would laugh.
Right.
Because there is this thing that if I get better, it'll all turn out for me and the angels will sing. And it's just not true. Golf professionals are no more happier playing than a 20 handicapper. As a matter of fact, many of them are much more afraid. They have to keep up their appearances to the members. They were better at one time, and they're not playing so well, that sort of thing. So it's no different. If you can say, if getting better isn't it, then what is? And that question is a good one to start with. What is your purpose for playing? Why have you chosen to spend 4.5 hours whacking a piece of rubber in a park and chasing it? That fundamental question of what's your purpose, only you can answer. The purpose of golf is not set in a book. The rules are to score as low as possible. But what's your purpose? Why are you doing this? And most people simply adopt a cultural purpose which says, I got to get better. I got to improve. And when I do, then it'll all turn out.
Yeah, but nobody's satisfied ever. Right?
Well,
I mean, you there you are with a room of people who had, as you said, the lowest handicap congregation ever, and they still wanted to get better. They still wanted to achieve lower scores.
But suppose we take a look at what would allow for true satisfaction. You know, I've given over 1,000 workshops now. And you ask people in a golf school or a PGA workshop, what do you really want? I mean, really want? People seem to ask just for a few things. And I've written down, we have sheets in a closet I'm looking at. Of all those workshops, we take down as best as we can recreate what people are really asking for. And people are asking for peace of mind. They're asking for real freedom, the capacity to let it go and not be constrained by doubt and fear. And they're asking for the capacity to coach themselves in such a way that they can take over their own empowerment, so to speak, rather than have someone say, you know, Fred, you just came over the top and you were too quick. So if that's what people are really asking for, how can you create an environment that they can get that? But here's the kicker. The kicker is think, if I play better, I'll get peace of mind, I'll get freedom, and I'll be able to coach myself. And that's not proven to be true. Mm-hmm. So if you were to say, come to a golf program and say, I am here to develop a greater peace of mind, or ease and grace in which I play.
Oh, I can imagine that they would look at you like a puppy hearing something for the first time.
Well, that's eventually when you talk to them, what, you know, when you really get down to it, people say that for themselves. You know, I really want just to not to play with a lot of fear. So worried about being embarrassed all the time. How much our desire for admiration of others hooks us into very weird behaviors. And on we go.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I just kind of was stunned,
okay.
Stunned there for a second.
That's us.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you talk to these people and you say, you know, what are you trying to achieve? I guess in a group like that, they want their customers to know that they can help them achieve lower scores and maybe even create the illusion that that will make them happier.
Well, if a lot of, I'm not against lower scores. I think they're wonderful. But what else could come along with it?
But they think that that's going to result in, I mean, aren't, you're in the golf industry. I mean, and the goal here is to generate revenue.
Yes.
Bottom line. I mean, you know, it's it would be nice if everyone can hit the ball well and it would be an easy game. But if it was an easy game and everyone can hit the ball well, then the industry would suffer.
Well, hang on. I have a different way of viewing that.
Please.
I came back from the Peace Corps in 1970 or 1982, and I decided to coach golf here in the Bay Area. So I went to a couple places and said, I got this idea about coaching golf. And they said, okay, we'll let you put up your lesson shingle here and start. So when I started, my intention was to empower people, enliven them, and enable them, not to foster dependencies. And I wasn't that interested in looking good, as best as I could tell. But it was always to empower people to learn how to coach themselves. So instead of the first ready-made answer, it was something about having people discover for themselves. It was about self-coaching. So in my first month at this one place, I probably got only 10 lessons. And the guy who owned the place felt sorry for me and sent his daughter to have a lesson. But after a while, I and other and the folks who were at the lesson really enjoyed having people learn how to coach themselves, empowering them because they were worthy of it. I mean, they really could begin to discover for themselves and feel for themselves and sense for themselves and to know where things are rather than having a coach always have to say things. And I found that after 3 months, my lesson book was full. When people say, if I could coach myself a solid hit, how about a curving the ball? And after a year of being there, there was a six-week waiting list. And this is not because I knew a lot of stuff. It's because of the nature of empowerment itself. People who feel, get a sense of what's possible for them, see a whole new range about what more is possible for them. And that's, I love that, actually.
I can see why you would.
It's just the opposite. People say, oh, if people get to play coaching well, they won't come back. My experience is the opposite. They come back more.
That's fascinating. I was just going to say, you probably don't befriend many coaches.
Well,
or instructors.
I have a lot of friends who are coaches and instructors.
But I mean, you know, industry-wide, because something that... I was told once in business that the sign of a good consultant is someone who doesn't give the final answer to the client. Because once you've given the final answer, they're not going to need you anymore.
Well, and the next question is there a final answer or is this an endless process of development? Wonderfully so. I mean, no one ever masters the sport. And see, and I know, and I've worked with so many PGA seminars. I like the folks in our profession. I think they're wonderful. But I know deep down they have one thing that they really want, and that's to make a difference for people. In the midst of wanting to make an income and wanting to look good, people are sincerely interested in the fact that their life has mattered for other people. And if they can find ways in which not only can people can develop their golf games, but they could find it. Suppose someone came to you and after a lesson said, you know, from a lesson with you, Fred, I got a different relationship with my daughter, and I learned how to listen more.
Hmm.
Having a lesson with you, I learned how to learn, and I took that back into my classroom. And I was teaching kids in such a way that altered the way that they learned too. Or, from being with you, I learned about concentration and getting away from this crazy voice in my head all the time. And learned how to be present more. And I just realized how much less stress my daily work life has. How about golf lessons that fulfilled that? That'd be interesting.
Yeah. That'd be really interesting.
But it's possible. This is not pie in the sky California talk.
Thank you.
Okay.
How is it, and we're heard globally, I want you to know that so people know what you're talking about. How is it that, or what would you advise, when looking for an instructor, if they don't bring up the idea of coaching yourself, is that somebody you want to check off your list and go, maybe I need to come back? I mean, what advice would you give to somebody, myself or someone listening, on how to find the right instructor for yourself?
It would be, I think, the first thing is the quality of their listening. See, my experience, what allows for real transformation is listening, not speaking. Really getting what a person wants, really. Really getting who they are. And then create, see, it's something like this. In the, let's say the first 5 minutes of a golf lesson. Are we okay to go into that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's one of my questions that I have written down is about your golf school, but go ahead and let's see where it goes from here.
Well, to me, in the first 5 minutes of a golf lesson, it's all done. It's like this. The first thing that starts out is the coach and the student have a conversation in which the student sees for himself or herself a new possibility that they maybe had not seen before. Something that turns them on and they get enough energy for action on. It's like someone coming to a coach and say, I want to stop my slice. Instead of the same coach saying, oh, take a few swings, partner, we'll see what we got. You might say, watch, listen to the words, if you could. What do you think you ought to pay attention to in order to make a difference? And the students say, oh, I don't know. And then say, check it out. Of all your years of experience, where do you think we ought to start? And the student will usually say, well, it's my hands or something. And the coach could say, okay, how about if we started there? And the coach could say, if in this hour of being together, you not only get how to stop a slice, but you can create a hook also and coach yourself in both hooking and slicing and feel the difference. Would that be valuable for you?
Invaluable.
Yeah. So, and then the last part would be, if I noticed, Fred, that during this hour that you started getting all mopey and poopy about not getting enough distance, do I have your permission to bring you back to our essential issue, which is about hooking and slicing and being able to coach yourself on that? Do I have your permission for that?
Hmm.
What would you say on that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so here's how we start it. First, we have a student has created a commitment for themselves. Secondly, that they have a context for the what they would say a successful lesson, that they can coach themselves by the end of the time. Thirdly, they have a place to begin to start putting their attention or a commitment. And fourthly, we've handled the first breakdown. Breakdown is simply when a person leaves their true intention and gets lost in the swirl of their thoughts. It ought to be better or different or something. If we have that in the first couple minutes, we got a chance here. We got a chance not only to make a difference, but to really have something wonderfully created that has never been created before. Now, if that's not set up, it usually ends up with kind of hunting and pecking and hoping the student hits a few good shots so they like what they're doing. It's not a waste of time. This is close to a waste of time as you can get. See, a lesson is simply, when you're left with it, has the person grown their awareness in a critical area in which they coach themselves and can see a wider context? The wider context could be, you know, not only to learn about hooking and slicing, but to learn about learning. Suppose you could take any process that we've done today about hooking and slicing and bring it into anything. Solid hit. You could bring it into sand shots. So it's learning about learning. So sometimes you can make it wide enough that it not only becomes interesting to people, but it has a person really get inspired to what might be possible. See, to me, that's a golf lesson that I would like to get started. I'd be interested in that one.
But is that a realistic golf lesson, or is this like what you hope to achieve at some point?
It's absolutely realistic. I mean, I don't find that difficult at all, because here's what I know. This isn't like a belief, okay? I know that human beings are incredible when they can create an environment for themselves that it's safe and put their attention in the area that matters. Be present in that area. Anybody can feel the face of the club or their hand. It's just that most of the time they're so freaked out about hitting a golf shot, they can't experience anything. So in a lesson, the important element is to create an environment of safety. And I tell a person, listen, for the next hour, I won't be judging you or assessing you. There's nothing you should do or shouldn't do. There's no right or wrong. I'm as interested as you are that you could discover what's going on. See, whether we like it or not, all golf teachers are environmentalists. The object is to create an environment in which remarkable discoveries can happen. And if you haven't got the environment, I don't care if it's school or golf or business, people don't learn. People learn when it's safe, and they're ready to learn because they've created their own agenda. And without that, you can't shove it into people. Not that, and believe me, we tried in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that everybody's at the same place at the same time ready to learn about, you know, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, I don't know, that was boring to me. Yeah. So if we've learned one thing, it's that human beings have a remarkable capacity to learn that's mostly beaten out of them early. And it's possible to rekindle that capacity during a golf lesson or golf school. And I find that very exciting to be around.
Sure, sure. And you talked about having their own agenda. Clearly, people come into a golf lesson with something they'd like to attain, a goal that they want to achieve. Obviously, in golf, their goal is to be, I'm sure they say, more hit the ball more consistently. They want to putt better, you know.
Sure, but let's go with that one. Hit it more consistently.
Yeah.
And all right, here's my question. What do you think you'd have to learn in order to learn that? What would you have to learn in order to hit it more consistently? And then take a pause and sit back. See, a normal lesson, if you watch it and it doesn't work, goes something like this. The student comes in and does the unburdening phase. Oh, you know, I've just been hitting it terribly, and I can't play the ladies' 18-hole group, and I'm just so embarrassed, and I'm just rolling the ball on the ground, and I can't get in the air. Got it? Then they sit back, and they expect someone to heal them. It does someone no service at all, not that you could anyway, to go in with all the answers, because you don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
But if at that point you could turn the table, so to speak, on what they expect, and simply say, what do you think we ought to do? Where should we start? What do you see? Always empowering, because people, they have amazing capacities to learn. The body has gone through several million years of evolution, unless you're a creationist, and it's about 6,000, but that's still pretty long. It has all these abilities. We're like the CEO of this amazing company called our body, and we don't even know its assets. See, the body doesn't speak English. It speaks a language called awareness. And awareness, the access to it is simply being present. So if a student is not present, meaning the fact they are not experiencing directly things that are happening, if they are in their head with worry or hope or concepts or frustrations or anything, if they're in their head, they're not going to learn. I don't care how smart you are. But if they're present, in the moments they're present, that's the moments when learning happens. That's the magic. A coach's job is to create an environment that a student can be present to things they've never been present to. And that's what teaches them, not the coach.
What kind of resistance do you get? Because people are coming in trying to be goal-oriented, and you want to take, not that you don't have goals for them,
sure,
but your goals may not align with theirs when they walk in the door.
My experience is that there's no resistance. And I'll tell you why. You have to know that people have concerns and issues and problems. All of us do. And you get it. And the person says, you know, I've been to everybody, and I'm still coming over the top and so forth. And you get that issue. But then you got to be straight with them. And straight with them like, listen, you've been to this guy and you've been to that guy, and you still have the same issue. If we do the same things you've always done, and you expect things to be different, we're crazy.
Well, yeah, isn't that the definition of insanity?
That's one definition of it.
Yeah.
But I said, how about, instead of relying on me as the answer, that you could experience it itself, and when you leave here, you could take a huge measure of self-coaching over that and experience things that you've never known before. You know, my sense of people when they get this is they like it. They say, okay, that sounds logical to me, rather than to be dependent on the next tip coming by, to be able to marshal my own resources, to do what I want. And if it's about hitting a ball longer, fine. It's about solid contact, it's great. But to know that they know that our roles are well-defined, they are responsible for their learning. Okay? Well, in one way, it's like this. The student is 100% responsible for their learning, and I'm 100% responsible, too. We have to both be. Mm-hmm. Responsible means, in a wonderful way, that we are able to respond. It's not a burden. It's I'm able to respond. I'm able to make a difference. That's called being responsible. It's a great asset. And just talking straight with people, rather than giving a pretense, it'll all work out if they simply just turn their hip to the left faster.
Fred, this has been absolutely phenomenal. Thank you so much for your time. Could we do this some more for next week's episode?
That's a real possibility.
All right. Well, that's Fred Shoemaker at extraordinarygolf.com. Thanks, Fred.
All right, Fred. Thank you very much.